This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins.
We continue from the Gaylord Resort here in Washington, D.C., the check-in site for the Marine Corps Marathon. And just had an awesome interview, if you didn't listen to it, with Lisa Anderson. And so make sure you check that out. Gold Star mom running for her son. And just a great, great lady. So check that out. Joining me now from one of our favorite organizations is Brian McPherson from the Semper Fi Fund. Brian, first of all, thanks for doing this.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. It's an exciting weekend.
Do you guys get excited about this one?
Oh, we get so pumped up. We were just talking about this last night with some of our staff and then service members coming in, their families, seeing all the community athletes, which are fundraisers. And, you know, it just starts to build 3 months out because everybody gets riled up about getting to see service members that we've assisted over the years, the new fundraisers are coming in. Like, we were just at the booth, and we have a fundraiser. He's been here all 10 years. So since we
were
the first, since we were the first charity partner all the way back and to the current day, you know. And the first time Semper Fi Fund, we were here in 2004. But we weren't a charity partner in 2004, but we had the first people running wearing Semper Fi Fund shirts then. So it's been a long journey, but a really good one because the weekend just means so much. And, you know, we're one of the amazing charities.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I've asked everybody this. Is there something different about the energy in this room, or is it just me because I haven't been here before?
No, it's special. It's unique to this marathon. Unlike us, we, you know, we start our year at Boston Marathon, which is great, right? Iconic race, massive. And then you come here to the Marine Corps Marathon months later, and the energy is just different, and it's unique in that it really is from the People's Marathon, like that iconic name. And there's no prize money here for the pros or for anybody. It's you came out here to run with the Marines and be a part of a number of different charities that are fundraising for the various organizations.
Right.
And I think that just brings a unique type of people here. We had some French. This is their very first international marathon. And I'm talking to the gentleman, and he just says, this is special. He's like, the energy is just different. He's like, this doesn't happen in France. And I thought, that's special. And I think
it could, and hopefully he goes home and they build their own Marine Corps Marathon that has this kind of thing.
Yeah, this atmosphere, right? And you see it in the athletes here walking around, or spectators, because they're getting fired up. You know, they're seeing Marines that are walking around their uniform here. That's special. I mean, you get a Marine in uniform, which, as you know, is very rare, sir, is Marines to be out in their uniform in the public.
Right.
So, outside the deltas, of course. So, and people see that, and they see the ribbons. And let's be honest, I mean, as Marines, our uniform's real sharp.
We don't have that many ribbons, though. Other people do. We fight, we claw for ours.
That's right. That's true, too.
We claw for ours. But no, it is. The aura of it is very cool. One of the coolest pieces, though, your organization, the Semper Fi Fund, Brian and I were talking yesterday. I remember when it got created. I was in Iraq when it got created because the principals that founded it were wives of guys in the 1st Marine Division, and they were just helping people. You know, how do I stay with my husband at Brooke Army Hospital in the burn unit for 7 or 8 months? How do I afford that? I have kids. What do I do? And out of that need came the Semper Fi Fund, and it's near and dear to my heart, and it's just an awesome story. And it keeps doing good things. So, Brian, talk to us about, first of all, let's talk about you real quick. Born and raised where?
So, born and raised in Ohio.
How does the Marine Corps get on your horizon?
So, kind of a strange story, the way it happened for me is my family has served in every major conflict. Oh, so all the way back, as far back as we can look.
You got no choice.
Right. Yeah, no choice. So, and my mother's side, all of her brothers served in the military.
Oh,
so,
shit.
In every branch. So for me, I had two older brothers and a younger brother. Neither one of my older brothers were going to serve. Like, that was a given.
Whoa.
So they didn't want to go in. And for me, it was as soon as I knew that 9/11 had happened, and even before that, the military was on my radar. And I can go think way, way back, and I had a good friend of mine I was in high school with. She had told me after my first deployment, I came home, and she said, you may not remember this. She goes, but in the fifth grade, a Marine walked in our room, and it was our teacher's brother, and he was in his dress blues. And she said, you probably don't remember this, but you looked over me and told me you were going to be a Marine. And so that was like very
special.
You're
one of those guys, though. There's a lot of different genres of guys who join. Woody Williams is one of these guys. I need that uniform to get a girl.
Yeah.
That was you in fifth grade?
Yeah, that's me in fifth grade.
That was legit. That's what he said. He said, I saw that guy in my hometown. I'm like, what's that? Oh, he's a Marine.
Yeah. And that's special. So for me, it was this ability to carry on the legacy that our family had been there to serve for the people. To reinforce that. So
tell us about, you joined the Marine Corps what year?
So I joined the Marine Corps 2006.
2006. And then what do you become?
So I was infantry Marine.
Nice. What unit?
So I was a 1st Battalion, 8th Marines.
1-8.
Yep. So
nice.
Went to 1-8.
Part of the 8th Marines Mafia.
That's right. It was good, you know.
It's a big one in the Marine Corps, too.
It is really good.
And a lot of people hate it.
They do, and it's unique.
It goes back to the 80s and the 80s, man, when the only ones that were doing anything. 8th Marines going to war, so Grenada, Lebanon, 8th Marines, everybody else sitting on their ass doing shit.
That's right, and we were tip of the spear for Fallujah, so battle for Fallujah.
Hey, relax now. Relax. Let's not get carried away with the rest of this craziness. That's awesome. So were you there?
I was not in Fallujah.
2006.
I just had to get you riled up a little bit by saying that. I had to throw that one in there.
So you do, how many deployments do you do?
So I did two deployments with 1st Battalion, 8th Marines.
All right. So, and then what did you do?
After that, actually, unfortunate circumstances. So due to some injuries, I was medically retired in 2012, which forced me into my transition.
Right.
For me, what was amazing is I saw this organization grow and develop, helped my squad leader who was injured in 2007 in Ramadi, Iraq, and severely injured my lieutenant as well. My lieutenant lost his leg above the knee, and he went on. He's actually on active duty.
And just for the record, Ramadi from 2004 to about 2008 was like Thunderdome. Yes?
Yes, it was. And you could, when we showed up.
I mean, like, real Thunderdome. It was on. And they were not going to go away until that city was annihilated.
That was true.
And that's what happened.
We were landing, and the helicopter was taking fire. It took us 3 shots before they were like, okay, we're taking minimal bullets. We can end now. Because we kept having to take back off because they were just firing at us from inside the city. So you can imagine a bunch of young Marines, you know, 18, 19 years old. And you're like, those are bullets. Those are not rocks.
This is real.
So, but the good thing for us was, and I can say that to a lot of people that aren't educated, the Marine Corps does a stellar job of training you.
Oh.
Particularly infantry units. I mean, they were prepared, and then for us it's...
When you think about what you saw, will you ever get over that?
No.
The courage, the selflessness, and not like once or twice a week, right?
Right. And you're on, you know, and that's the thing is, I tell people often is, it doesn't turn off. You know, like the tempo is just there.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day. All right. So, what do you do now with Semper Fi Fund?
So, now I am the Senior Manager of Communications for Semper Fi Fund.
Oh.
So, I went from the organization that helped me.
So, did you tell Wendy Lethane that she's like on the Auburn Radio Most Wanted list?
I did. But, you know, Wendy's so busy.
I can imagine.
They're just so busy.
She's just really busy. You tell her that there's only one way you get off the list.
That's right. And for us, this weekend being our biggest of December 500's biggest event of the year.
I know.
They're trying to, you know, make sure everything is good for
Brian,
all the fundraisers.
Look at me when I'm talking to you, okay? Tell Wendy. No, I love the organization. All right, now, you're not supposed to be the feature of this interview, right?
That's right. I'm not.
You're not. Right. All right, so tell everybody we're going to meet a former gunnery sergeant. All right.
Yeah.
So who's now a TV star, for God's sake?
That's right. So J.W. Cortez.
J.W. Cortez.
Fantastic guy.
Gunny Cortez.
Yeah, Gunny Cortez.
Was he Gunny Select or did he wear it?
No, he wore it.
That makes a difference.
No, he wore it.
You know what we call Gunny Select? Staff Sergeant.
So he was the real deal.
All right.
Real deal, you know. He was.
What was the MOS?
So first he started out as a radio guy.
But
then he corrected himself, you know. He came over to the infantry.
Did he?
Yeah, he did.
So he's legit.
He is legit.
All right.
So, but
because you know this is All Marine Radio, we don't play that. Like some things matter.
Yeah, he's not soft.
All right.
So it's good. But JW, really great supporter of ours. He ran the 10K with us last year. But the guy can sing too. He sang the national anthem last year before the start of the 10K.
Maybe he'll sing for it.
Yeah, he put him on the spot.
I will.
That's what Marines do to other Marines.
Yes, trust me. Nobody's got to educate me. All right. But now he's one of the stars in the show Gotham.
He is. He's Detective Alvarez in the show. So one of the only cast members that's not the main cast member to stay in the whole time. So they're shooting the last season now. But he's still staying active. And the good thing is like I say about JW is, and for a lot of Marines like yourself, they want to speak about what the struggle is for a lot of service members,
right. And
how he can utilize his platform for acting to advocate for them and educate the community and to let them know they're not alone. And
right.
I think the big thing is, you know, that's a really big thing.
Right. That's
humbly for him. He makes the time.
You're on the right radio show to talk about that because
that's what we do.
All right. So without further ado, Brian, you're going to have to come back on and we'll talk some more about the Semper Fi Fund. And things you guys got coming up, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's perfect.
But now we're going to meet Gunnery Sergeant J.W. Cortez.
Yeah, perfect.
Detective Alvarez. He's on his cell phone right now.
Yeah, he is. He's a busy man.
Yeah, he must be. It's how like TV stars. When you're a TV star, you're busy.
Yeah, or, you know, he's a Marine. Maybe he thinks he's important.
No, he's legit. He's legit.
All right. Yes, you're right.
Gunny Cortez is going to join us now again on a Saturday before the Marine Corps Marathon. So he's wearing his red Semper Fi T-shirt. Got an expensive-looking phone. Got a good haircut, a little bit longer than it used to be. Got a little bit of a tattoo going down his left arm. So Gunny, first of all, welcome to All Marine Radio.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
No, it's our pleasure having you. First of all, we need to find out about you, right? Brian says you're legit, but you know how Marines are. We got to judge your ass ourselves.
That's right.
All right, so born and raised where?
Brooklyn, New York City.
And you're a Yankee guy.
What else is there?
We were talking about watching the Red Sox in the World Series. I mean, everything has gone right for the Red Sox. Their number 9 hitter has driven in 10 runs with 2 outs. Like, if that's not God saying, I feel these losers up in Boston, I need to throw them a fish, I don't know what is.
And this is why we know that God loves us all. We are all God's children. Yeah.
If you love Red Sox fans, those people are so obnoxious. Yeah. So you're a Yankee guy. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar as a kid?
Well, I think the sense of service, I know for sure it came from my dad. My dad was drafted for service in Vietnam in 1967 with just about 2-3 years of landing in New York City from Puerto Rico. The man barely spoke the language, but he was drafted, right? Because Puerto Ricans are American citizens as well, so he was eligible. So he went overseas with the 4th Infantry Division. Served two tours in Vietnam, and my dad still speaks English with a very heavy accent. But what is incredibly accurate and very precise is his his enunciating of what it meant for him to serve, right? He can go on and on in a very, very well spoken, you know, his accent isn't as thick when he's talking about his service to our country. And so he was always and still is very proud of that service. And as a young boy, I would see how people would react to him. And whenever we would see someone in uniform, he'd always make it a point to point that person out to us. And I think that's where it started. Wow, this is something that is very respected, and if my dad is speaking highly of it, then it must mean something, right? Fast forward 1993, I was raised on a pretty rough block in New York City. We talk about blocks, right? So the block I grew up on had been nicknamed by the NYPD as Little Vietnam. And it wasn't because it was a colorful, you know. it was, you know, we were surrounded by nothing but the worst of the worst. And so for me, the Marine Corps presented itself as an opportunity to become something more, you know. And so that's why when I...
But your dad's a soldier.
My dad's a soldier.
And you're the Marine Corps. So what points you in the direction of the Marine Corps?
That's a great question. Me and my dad didn't always have the best of relationships, you know, and I get it, you know, being a dad now myself, he wanted the best for me. He didn't want me to succumb to going on. His older son, my older brother, did, you know, and so that's a different story. But at the time, we were not getting along, and I wanted to one-up him. And I felt, what better way than to become a Marine?
You're
right?
That kid. you're that kid.
I am. Sorry, Dad.
That's awesome. But no, you know, that's common, right? Brian and Woody joined because they needed the dress blues to get a girl, right?
Right.
And that's legit. Guys do that. They see that dress blue uniform like, whoa, who is that?
Right.
Yeah, you really don't want it. No, I need that to get a girl. I'm all in on that.
Sure.
But right behind that, I'd say number two is I got a chip on my shoulder, whether it be for your father or something. And yeah, I'm gonna be a Marine. I'm gonna show everybody.
That's right.
And so that's you.
Yeah, and that was me. And you know, when you parade pass, you know, you do the pass review in Parison, and as you're about almost done with training, the one voice that I vividly remember, I get chills, was my dad screaming at the top of his lungs, you know, this again, thick Puerto Rican accent, you know, Chino! And man, was
awesome.
He proud, you know.
That's
but meanwhile, awesome. It was born out of that. I wanted to one-up my dad.
Talk to us about, so you graduate from boot camp, you become a communicator?
I was a comm bubba. Yeah, I did, to be honest with you, I did not like being a comm bubba.
Well, that means you were smart, though.
Well, you know, I guess I did okay on my exams.
If you weren't smart, you would have gone straight to the grunt.
Straight to the, you know, and that's interesting because some of the most brilliant people I've ever met were grunts. You know,
contract, everything else was filled.
Where
are we going to send them? You're going to be a grunt, son.
Be a grunt, yeah.
There you go. But and you were a communicator.
I was a communicator. I didn't last that long, about 2 years or so.
Where were you? Were you on the East Coast, West Coast?
West Coast.
Part of ninth crime.
Mm-hmm.
Ninth crime. Hey, look, everybody knows about it.
Right.
So you're part of ninth crime. How do you, ninth comm battalion. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So how long do you do that?
For about, a little under 2 years. And I remember that we had a sergeant check in to our unit, squared away Marine, looking, you know, just all kinds of jacked. And I said, man, where are you coming from? You know, you're coming into our unit. And he's like, I just got off of embassy duty. Like, what's that? And just the picture he painted was like, man, I need to figure out a way to get into that thing, you know. And so I signed up for embassy duty. And I got lucky, and that's what got me out of comm.
So where'd you go? Normally, what, embassy duty, the hardship place and a not-so-hardship place, yes?
Right. So my quote-unquote hardship was Nairobi, Kenya.
That's legit.
And it was legit. You know, I remember getting off the airplane in Nairobi, which was like stepping back about 40 years, right? I mean, really old.
Only 40?
At least, yeah, right, if not more, right? And I was greeted by this Marine, and I tell this story because it was one of those moments where it was so good to see one of my own, you know, amidst this space, this crowd of people who didn't look like me at all. And so this Marine emerges from the crowd, and he's got a, you know, high reg haircut, super squared away, and he extends his hands and he says, you know, welcome to Nairobi. I'm Sergeant Childers. I want you to remember that name, Sergeant Childers. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was my hardship, and it wasn't that bad. You know? It wasn't that bad. And then I ended up in a really amazing place called Canberra, Australia.
That's not bad.
It was really tough.
So from there, where do you go?
After my time in Australia, I returned to MSG Italy in Quantico, Virginia. Colonel Goodman was the CEO, and I said, sir, if there's any way you could make this happen, I'd be forever indebted to you. I wanted to go straight to the drill field. And he looked at me, he said, son, I can do a lot, but I can't take you from one B billet straight into another. Those days are gone. You gotta go back into the fleet. So that's when I fell into the reserve side of the house, and I stayed there for a number of years.
Okay.
And then I ended up with the infantry out of New York, Garden City 225.
Yeah. Did you deploy them?
I did. We piggybacked with 2-2 for the invasion in 03, March of 03.
Give me a combat leadership lesson. So you were a gunny at that time?
I was a staff sergeant. Yeah, I got promoted under this huge beat-up Portugal Hussein in a mock formation.
Nice.
And, it was just kind of like an FU to Saddam. Like, yeah, staff sergeant.
What a great memory, though, right?
Awesome memory.
Give me a combat leadership lesson.
Combat leadership lesson. Take care of you guys. They'll take care of you. Keep your weapon, clean at all times.
There you go.
Especially if you're in that environment. It's, yeah.
So you come home, you get out, when does the acting thing start? Had you been interested in it? Did you do it in high school?
I did.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, I did some in high school. I would even sing in the subways of New York City.
For money? I mean,
for money or just for practice. But it was like a doo-wop group, you know, of guys singing songs. And New York City is the ultimate stage, man. If people will stop their commute to listen to you, you've got something.
Right.
So all that stuff, you know.
Incredible art, though. Mm-hmm. Street art in New York City. If you haven't been ever or... if you've ever been, you know it. You see it. I mean, incredibly talented people that are singing in the subway, at an entrance to the subway, on the street. Very, 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 very cool.
Very, very cool. And so, yeah, I mean, all that stuff got put on hold. I'm in the Marine Corps. But I think back, you know, and I kind of would get my rocks off singing cadences, you know, and jazzing them up somewhat. So I always got called out.
Were you good at it?
I was.
There you go. Must have been.
Yeah.
If you're not good at it, you don't get called out.
Yeah.
The guys that only get called out at the end.
At the end, right. So I think that was the way I kind of kept that going. Fast forward, during the invasion, you know, we came under a very heavy Scud missile attack, and I guess I had a moment like, man, this is about to end quite possibly. And I had all these dreams and things I wanted to try that I always kind of put off until I was done with the Marine Corps, and it was a shitty feeling, you know, to go, man, I'm not going to be able to do any of that now. And so I guess that compromise of time forced upon you is a great way to kind of wake you up and say, okay, look, if you have the time, or if you don't, make it, you know, because nothing's guaranteed. So that's like kind of what fueled that fire.
So how does what's your path into television, into that industry? Not the easiest, but we have some pretty high-profile Marines that have done pretty well.
Very well.
All right.
Very
Adam...
Well. Driver.
Adam Driver, right?
That's right.
Adam Driver, and he, you know, like you, he knows that the tribe never lets go.
That's right.
And he comes back, and you see him doing stuff with Marines. Very cool, like you.
Yeah.
Very awesome. And I'm sure very inspiring for young Marines about if you have a creative side, don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. And there's people out there that'll look for you, and that's cool. So how does your path, what opens the door?
So I come back and I stay in the reserves, and I needed a job, and I thought, what can I possibly do to, you know, keep food on the table? And I had a son on the way. Me and Francesca were struggling to make ends meet, and long story short is I applied for many jobs, and one of those was the police department, the transit side of the police department in New York City. And so the MTA PD called and I said, hey, we want to hire you. And I was like, I thought to myself, I'll do that temporarily just to kind of keep things going. And very unbeknownst to anyone else in the district, in the precinct, I was taking acting lessons at night. and I'd go back to my foot post, and I'd learn lines, and and my poor partners, you know, I'd be like, hey, can you read some lines with me, you know? Because to me, it was just a temporary thing. Right. Right. But the life of the actor is quite arduous. It's very, very difficult. So I needed to stay on the job longer and longer because the jobs were far and few in between. So it was either waiting tables or walk feet. But I was a Marine. I am a Marine. I can do that.
Right.
You know, and so I felt very comfortable in that wheelhouse, and it supplemented the dry spots, you know, the lulls in the career. Fast forward, I started booking work, you know, little spots here and there, co-stars. And the guys at work were looking at me like, do you want to share something with us there, Cortez? Because you look like the guy that was just on that show last night, you know, and the cat was out the bag. And probably the next day or so, I kept seeing the word Hollywood written on my locker at work. And, you know, guys.
Were they supportive, or was it a good thing or a bad thing in their eyes?
You know, police department is very similar to the Marine Corps. So, yeah, guys will call you all kinds of stuff. And right. Then behind you, you know, they'll say, man, this kid's, you know, he's in his dream. You know, good for him.
Right.
You know, so my supervisors get a kick out of, you know, Hollywood, and they've been very, very supportive. And if not for that, I don't think I would have the career that I have now. Yeah, because most people don't know is that although I play a detective on television, right, I am still on the job. I still wear the uniform. You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
talk to us about Gotham. How does that happen?
2014, I go in audition right before I'm about to board a flight with my family to go to Puerto Rico, to an island off the island of Puerto Rico called Culebra. And I'm on the island. I get a phone call from my manager, and she's like, where are you? I'm like, can you know where I am? I'm in Puerto Rico. I'm surprised my phone even works. And she's like, you're Detective Effin Alvarez. They just called. They want you booked. They want to book you for this new show. I said, what show? I didn't even remember.
Get out.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've been on the show now 5 seasons. You know, one of the few detectives who's still alive.
That's good, man.
Yeah. It's
combat
good.
Skills. Combat skills. The Marine Corps teaching you, man. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, and you know, the best part, you know, acting on a television show, there's no audience. There's no instant gratification. Nobody's applauding.
Right.
The best part has been being stopped on the streets of New York when I'm in my uniform and a fan goes, oh my God, it's Alvarez, right? But wait a minute. You know,
what are you doing?
Yeah, why are you in this uniform? Are you shooting Gotham right now? You know?
Where's the camera?
Yeah, or when I get invited to places like St. Jude Children's Hospital,
right,
and or
One of the coolest places on Earth.
On Earth, absolutely.
Other than where we're at right now, but it's that same spirit.
Same spirit.
That beautiful, selfless spirit. I wanna talk about Semper Fi, but before that, Sergeant Childers.
Yeah.
You told me to remember that name.
Yeah.
And I'm a good Marine, and I wrote that shit down.
That's right.
So why do I want to remember that name?
Sergeant Childers, after our time together in Nairobi, went through MESAP and earned his commission. And during the invasion of Iraq on March 21st was our first casualty of war. He's the first service member Marine to have been killed in the Iraq War.
Was he in the helicopter?
No, he was. He had a small team, and he was second lieutenant at the time. And he was going, I believe, to secure a facility in an open area. And a vehicle quickly approached from the distance. He saw it. He spotted it. He presented his weapon to order the vehicle to stop approaching. The vehicle kept coming, opened up on the guys. Most of the guys had taken up a secure position behind a vehicle. Shane went out front, and he received the brunt of the small arms fire, and he subsequently died from his wounds. So, yeah, he's enshrined right there on my ribs. But, yeah, that was my bud. That was my bud.
The talk to us about Semper Fi. How do you know what? One of the reasons that we're here is that we just talked to Lisa Anderson. Her son was killed. Hell, you went through where he was killed in the vicinity of Najaf during the march up. You went through that area. But there's just incredible people and in our tribe, right, who have, you know, Brian's got a bracelet on, right? You've got a tattoo, right? I still wear my dog tags because I can't take them off, right? I mean, we're just literally, say we're tattooed with it is absolutely what we are. We're tattooed different places. I'm sure that when you cross paths with Semper Fi Fun, it doesn't take you long before you say, will I do that? Well, yeah, I'll do that. Talk to us about how you cross paths with them and how you get hooked with them.
It's a great question. Yeah. Semper Fi Fun. I get approached a lot now that I'm a little bit more recognizable, depending on the circumstances. But I get approached a lot. And to be honest with you, you know, a lot of BS out there. There's a lot of garbage out there. People taking advantage of our tribe, right, and our community. And that's, right. That's to me, there's just, I have no tolerance for that. The Semper Fi Fund.
Less than no tolerance, right? There's
less
certain
no
things
tolerance.
We don't have a tolerance for.
That's right.
Then there's some things that will make us react.
That's right.
Very quickly, and that's one of them.
That's one of them. And so when I heard about the Semper Fi Fund, which I had always heard of,
right.
I just didn't do my homework. But when I did, and I saw the numbers were staggering,
right.
But in a positive way. Right?
Right.
I'm like, this is amazing. And after very quickly meeting with Wendy and Kathy Wise and Karen and people like Brian, I knew that I was surrounded by people who got it. You know, many of them were spouses. You and I know what it's like to be a Marine Corps spouse at that, right?
Right. No, I mean, I was in Iraq working with Wendy's husband.
Look at that.
And know what they were dealing with when they said, you know, my husband's in the burn unit at Brooke Army Center. I can't afford to stay there. What do I do? And these women started this organization from nothing.
Nothing.
And took nothing. And all they did was help people. I play their public service announcements as a part of Balmering Radio. In every segment, you'll hear Semper Fi Fund because it's such an awesome, awesome, selfless charity. And still, if you look at their administration, their administrative costs, they're minuscule compared to most. So what was the first thing you got involved with?
Well, last year they hired me as their one of the keynote speakers.
Awesome.
Of course, you know, who do I share the stage with? as a guy, Kyle Carpenter, you know, Medal of Honor recipient.
Right.
My
right,
Jesus, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
Do some serious acting there.
Right.
But yeah, so that was the first official engagement.
I helped save him.
Is that right?
We're in Afghanistan. Our air officers learned how to cheat medevacs. They went to the dust-off unit and said, instead of waiting till you get tasked, would you go out and get the helicopter and spin if it's in this area, and that way we'll cut 12 minutes off the medevac.
Wow.
And these Army guys were like, we'll absolutely do that. And that medevac got to him. If you hear him talk, it got to him in a hurry. And it's awesome.
It's awesome.
You know, we always say Marine Corps is not that big.
It really isn't.
It's not.
It's really not.
It's not.
It's amazing.
And so you follow him. How'd you do?
I don't know. Back again. So hopefully, I think there's a video of it too on YouTube. So that was your first official engagement. But you know, I was up there in the Warrior Games with the Semper Fi Fund team, and I'm back again this year. I ran the 10K, and then last year I ran the New York City Marathon as a member of the Semper Fi Fund team, which was awesome. Awesome.
So how far do you run when you run the marathon as part of the team? Did you run the whole 26?
I ran the entire 26.2.
Come on.
Yeah,
you're
man.
Not a marathon-looking dude.
And I am not. I am not. This body's not equipped for marathons.
26.2?
Yeah, 26.2.
How did you do that?
Listen, we're not going to brag about times, right?
No. Look, there's a lot of us who've never even tried it, man. I see 26.2 and I say, nah, that ain't for me, man.
That's for somebody else. Yeah, I mean,
skinny, somebody like Brian, right?
Brian says,
I just ran 4 marathons this year. You look like, yeah, right. You see it, you're like, okay, look, I know he wants to be part of it. He didn't run a marathon.
Yeah,
wow.
You know, 4.5 hours. I will tell you, we've all done some pretty tough stuff, you know,
right.
Stuff that really measures the metal. But it was one of the hardest things I've ever attempted.
I've humped 26 miles.
Sure, yeah.
But run it?
Yeah.
Nah, dog, that ain't me.
You know, like the last 4 or 5 miles, I kept trying to remember my first phase drill instructors, you know, just get up there, you know, and get up. And it wasn't working.
No.
I was a bit belligerent.
But you know you can't quit, right?
You can't.
You can't. I wish you could have seen the look on his face just then.
Uh-huh.
Because it was straight up. It was straight up look.
Yeah.
The reason All Marine Radio exists is for post-combat related mental health. Something I know that you care about. Talk to us about, what we talk about a term that I created called post-traumatic winning. Most of us don't know it, but when trauma darkens our doorstep, there's another door in the back, kind of in the corner, but because of the room is obscured by like not a movie hand grenade going off with all that flame and stuff. But a hand grenade that just dust and smoke everywhere. And you can't see it, and it helps if you have a mentor to show it to you. But that door is a door that takes you to greater things. Because if you go through that door, if you can get your hands around your own experience, and you can understand that you're not going to get over it, you're going to live with this till they close the casket on you, and then you'll probably still be dealing with it afterwards. If you understand that you can't fight this with drugs and alcohol in your life, if you understand that you have a trauma menstrual cycle. Some days you can think about it and talk about it. Other days just the thought makes you cry. That's all okay. It's all okay. We're warriors. At least we signed up for it. You have people that Gold Star families and mothers, they didn't sign up for it. You have young women like Elizabeth Smart, who's living an incredible life, who spent, was kidnapped when she was 14 and raped almost on a nightly basis. We can still live the lives we want, but I think it's important that staying connected to your tribe, not being afraid to talk about it, and not for us as tribal members, not being afraid to be real with each other, even if it means that you got to yoke somebody up. So give me your thoughts on it. I know you have strong feelings about it.
Yeah. First of all, man, if you're right now listening to this and you're wondering if your life matters, it does. It does, I hope that you will find a way to reach out to anyone that you think can be of assistance, including me. And they can find me on social media at JW Cortez with an S. I feel like more of us just need to kind of be a bit more outspoken in the sense of, like you said, find your tribe. And if you can find a way to open up about your experience in a way that really resonates as truthful to you, then that's a really great place to start with. That's what happened to me. I thought I could figure this thing out by myself. I closed off all of my contacts with all my buddies that I served with, but it wasn't until many, many years later that I said, you know what, this isn't going to go away. And I try to mask it with a lot of things that you've already mentioned, So I'm now today 7 years, sir. And I have now a bit more of that clarity, and I can understand that it's okay for me to go through these things and to have the cycles.
JW. I had a helicopter crash inside my company area when I was a captain out of 29 bombs, right? And everybody in the helicopter killed. We're trying to save them, and that whole thing. You're trying to save them. They're trying to live, but it ain't working. My gunny walks up to me, 6'5", Lance Y., high school graduate, told me the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life. Asked me, hey, Skipper, how are you? How are you doing? I said, I've been busy. I haven't even thought of it. And he says, you're never getting over this. I said, what? I got told that within hours after that happened. And any time that it reached out and grabbed me, I never thought that there was anything wrong with me, ever, because of him. I've given his advice, and much of the advice that you heard me just give, that's all handed down oral tradition, largely through the enlisted side of the Marine Corps. And I know those guys in Vietnam, and so I asked him, where did you get that? He said, Vietnam guys. And light goes on. I know the Vietnam guys weren't the smartest guys in the room. Where did they get it? World War II and Korea, what guys they served with. And so there's this beautiful oral tradition that we have of these plain, simple truths, plain spoken mental health pieces about you got to stay connected to your battle buddies, man. You got to, because they'll call you out. They know. Sorry, JW, ain't having it, ain't buying it. You need to get your shit in one sock right? Or else I'm coming for you.
That's right.
Right? And they know that. And then to me the beautiful thing is when we do that, we can then turn around and touch the lives of other people by telling them, putting our hands on their shoulders and say, hey man, you can do it. There's nothing wrong with you. You're okay. You don't need those drugs. It's okay to be damaged.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so your point about staying connected, man, is so huge.
So huge. You know, and I get all kinds of mail now, right?
Right.
And I tell you, my favorite pieces to open up are pieces from veterans. I say, hey, dude, I just found out that you're also a Marine. Like, man, to the F with this show or whatever, like, you're a Marine, man, and you've just inspired me like you wouldn't even believe, you know, like that. You can't put a price on that. That's bigger than acting.
I call them the Grinch moment, man. Grinch, here's the Who people singing, and his heart gets big, right?
I love that.
Right?
Yes.
It's a visual, right? It's like the Grinch, man. The Grinch was traumatized as a little dude because he looked like a, I don't know, like some kind of animal shit, right? A green. He gets jacked up, and so he took, you know, he was hating on everybody, but he changes, and his life changes when he gives, and his heart grows, and everybody laughs when I say that, right? The Grinch, but it is. He's somebody. How good do you feel when they find that, or you touch somebody with your ability now?
Yeah.
And look, you're a big-time TV guy, right?
Yeah.
Right? But when you do touch somebody, is there a better feeling that you get than when you know that you've changed somebody's life for the better?
None. None. It makes it all worth it. Somebody said it a long time ago. You want to do something selfish? Help someone. And that has been my motto. Yeah. So I love being incredibly selfish in that way.
No, and you know what? And we all have it in our capacity to do that. And especially we as veterans, because if you've been in the Marine Corps, you've been in the Marine Corps 14 years, you deal with trauma. Whether you're stateside, whether you're deployed or in combat. You're going to deal with tragedy, and actually, if you pay attention, we get relatively good at it, or at least okay with it. Civilians, they don't even deal with it.
No.
And so you have the capacity to help.
Yeah.
The Grinch.
You know, it's interesting. When I went through my acting training, I studied at a really renowned school called William S. Burr Studio. My acting teacher opened my eyes up in a way that had never happened before.
Oh.
He says, JW, you've lived an entire life of service. Go, what do you mean? He's like, well, you joined the military, you were in service to our nation, you become a cop, you're in service to the people of New York, and as an actor, as an artist, you're in service to your audience. I go, what? He's like, yeah, people pay hard, you know, money here to see you go up there and perform and help them escape and deal with life. That is just as much of a service as anything else you've ever done. And hearing that said, oh my God, that's why I think I can do this. Because before that, it was kind of like, it's kind of, you know, for the different kinds of different people. But no, I think that's why I am so committed to staying the course with this other career, because of that alone.
All right, first of all, tell people who have never seen you,
yes,
and now are going to hear you, where do they find you on their television?
Thursday nights on Fox. Gotham will be returning for its fifth and final season. Thursday nights, 8 p.m. on Fox, come March 2019. There's talks of possibly a spinoff, so, you know, keep an ear out for that. But, yeah, that's where they can catch me.
Detective Alvarez.
Carlos Alvarez, yes.
All right. First of all, it is an absolute honor to meet you, man. Always love to meet guys doing good things and more importantly, kind of preaching the gospel of post-traumatic winning, which I call look, we're not disabled or dysfunctional simply because we went and fought for our country. It's not the easiest thing to deal with, but we can all do it, and we can all continue to contribute to our communities just the way you are. And you're a great example of it, man. Thank you for coming on and doing this.
Always an honor. Honor's mine. Thank you, sir.
More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Here from the Marine Corps Marathon on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.